to Local Talk on KHOI Community Radio, where we explore people, stories, and events in Central Iowa. I am your host for today, Ursula Rudenberg, together with Greta Anderson.
Hello, Ursula, and hello to you, the listener. Thank you for joining us here on Local Talk.
This is the last Local Talk in September, this beautiful month of September 2014.
Yes, it's been a great month, and I'm sure that most of us hate to see it go.
I hope you were able to fully enjoy the weather. Unfortunately, this warm and sunny weather is predicted to end by the middle of the week and be replaced by unseasonally chilly weather.
Oh, I don't know if I'm ready for that. But speaking of how nice this past weekend was, congratulations to both the Octagon Arts Center and Maximum Ames, who both had wonderful and successful festivals this past weekend.
The Octagon Arts Festival and Maximum Ames Music Festival, both organizations brought a lot of talent into Ames this weekend, and it looked like they had a really great turnout. Lots of good stuff. Congratulations, guys.
Including two hip-hop shows here at the Pantorium.
Yes, as KHOI grows, we just turned 2 years old in August. Our relationships are growing and opportunities for collaboration in the interest of community building. It's really great.
And speaking of that, this coming Friday, we will be holding an event here at KHOI, a film screening. Journalists Dennis Chamberlain from the ISU Greenlee School of Journalism and Gavin Aronson from the Ames Tribune will be joining us to lead a discussion afterwards.
We will be showcasing a film called Shadows of Liberty, which is about media censorship, cover-ups, and corporate control. In a few minutes, the award-winning filmmaker Jean-Philippe Tremblay will be calling us here on Local Talk to tell you about the film.
Also, later in the show, we will be talking about an initiative that uses age-old principles of health and well-being to make Ames a healthier place.
So while we wait for the filmmaker, Tremblay, to call in, let's check in with our Community Service Appreciation Program. Every month, KHOI reporter Kay Puttock features a series of interviews and announcements about one organization that does public service to inform you about what is being offered in our area. Whether you can use the service or whether you can just appreciate and support the organizations in our community who do this good work. I know I've learned a lot from these interview segments. Kay has featured Bethesda Lutheran Church this month, so this will be her last interview with them for at least a while. Rick, can we listen to her interview?
I'm Kay Puttock, and I'm doing this month a series on Bethesda Lutheran, the services for the community that they offer. Last time we talked about the clothing closet, and today we're going to talk about the food pantry. And to help us look into this, there's Rod Fisher here from Bethesda Lutheran. Welcome.
Thank you, Kay. I'm glad to be here.
Well, why don't we start by just talking about the services that you offer to people? If I was interested in coming to the food pantry, what would I need to know?
First off, the food pantry is open 5 times a week, and those hours are Monday from 9 to 11 a.m. Then on Tuesdays, they're open from 1 to 3 p.m., and then evening hours from 6:30 to 8 p.m. Wednesdays, they're open in the morning from 9 to 11, and then they're open on Thursday afternoons from 1 to 3. Basically, you show up, you register, if you will, and then you're able to shop for products that are available at the pantry.
Is it complicated to register?
No, it's just basically a matter of name and address. It's basically just for our records.
So basically open every weekday except Friday.
Correct.
At least for part of the day. And on Tuesday, open the afternoon and the evening.
Yes.
And I believe the clothing closet is open at some of the same time.
So yes, I believe they coincide opening time so people can take advantage of both areas.
Mm-hmm. And you say they shop, but in fact, it doesn't cost them anything.
Oh, no. The way it works is, depending on the number of people in your family, you're given so many pounds of food. So, for example, if there was one adult and, say, one child under 9 that was shopping, the adult would be eligible for 14 pounds of food, and the child would be eligible for 4 pounds of food. We also give out milk vouchers that are worth $4 each and are redeemable at local grocery stores. And you get one voucher if it's a family of 1 to 4 individuals. If there's 5 or more, then you receive 2 milk vouchers. And in fact, that's one of our largest expenses is the milk vouchers.
Uh-huh. Now, when you talk about these pounds of food, is this per week or?
You are allowed to visit the food pantry once a month.
So most of these foodstuffs are imperishable things?
We have canned goods. We do get fresh vegetables as well as meat. But the variety and the choices may vary from week to week.
So you must have quite a lot of storage space and refrigeration and so on.
Well, we're always searching for storage space. We end up putting food in our AV closet and maybe in a closet where we also store tables and that sort of thing. But the volunteers, they're really good at finding space to put the canned goods, especially.
But then if a new volunteer comes, they won't know where to look. And you do have refrigeration and freezer space.
Yes, exactly. As a matter of fact, we just bought a new cooler earlier this summer.
Where do you get supplies from?
Well, supplies come from individual contributions. We also receive supplies, for example, from the Walmart that's just north of the mall. We also get donations from various churches and other organizations in the community. For example, in May, the mail carriers have a big food drive. And I think when they had their drive in May, we had something like 12 or 15 of those large mail baskets filled with food.
Oh, wow.
Somewhere in that neighborhood. Mm-hmm. So it's very successful and it's really very helpful.
So,
especially in the summer because donations tend to drop off in the summer.
Do you get surplus and so on from grocery stores? Well, you've mentioned Walmart. But...
Yeah, and obviously, too, we also go to the Food Bank of Iowa, which is in Des Moines. We can order supplies from them.
Is there anything we should tell our listeners that you need in the way of donations, whether it's money or any special kinds of food?
Well, as I was saying, the summer months are really slow when it comes to donations and monetary gifts. So maybe next summer, if you wish to contribute, we would very much appreciate a contribution, whether it's food or fresh vegetables or a monetary donation. Things tend to pick up now with the latter part of the year with Thanksgiving and Christmas coming. One thing that we do have trouble keeping in stock, if you will, is meat. The Food Bank of Iowa doesn't always have a large supply of meat, so frequently we ourselves have to go to, like, Fairway and purchase meat items mm-hmm. for our guests.
Okay. Now, you mentioned the summer is slow. How about volunteers? Do you need more volunteers in the summer?
Actually, we have a waiting list of volunteers.
Oh, really? Okay.
So we have somewhere in the neighborhood of about 80 volunteers a month, whether it's individuals that are there when the pantry is open or those folks that go to Des Moines to pick up food supplies, those people that are stocking. We have a very wonderful set of volunteers. We have dedicated staff, I guess you would say.
So you're not in the need of volunteers right at the moment. Now, I understand the food pantries had an interesting history.
Yes, I know a little bit about the history. We trace our beginnings to 1983. Apparently, there was a young mother with 3 children who came to the church asking for food. So the minister at that time went into our kitchen and was able to supply her with some materials or some food that she was able to feed her family. And then that evolved to where we got our own space in 1990. We remodeled another area for our kitchen. So we apparently took over the old kitchen area. So in 1990, we opened to the community. One of the big events, the food pantry, was in 1993 when we had the big flood because the human services building on South Duff was flooded. And since that building housed all the supplies for another emergency food program, the Mid-Iowa Community Action Agency.
Yeah, MICA.
Yes, MICA. We basically took over their responsibilities during that major flood. And then in 2000, we expanded our hours. In 2013, we served almost 17,000 individuals.
Wow.
And the total number of households we served came to almost 4,400 individuals.
That's a lot.
It is. And we gave out, or distributed, I should say, just over 125,000 pounds of food.
Well, this is obviously a very much needed service that you're supplying here.
We found, you know, that the numbers are fairly steady from year to year. They may go up a little bit. They may go down a little bit. So I think for the most part, except for problems with finding storage area at times, the space itself is pretty good for meeting our needs,
mm-hmm.
I think.
Mm-hmm. I'm sort of interested in the slow in the summer because I would have thought that you'd have people bringing the overflow from their gardens in the summer. And I guess there's a question there, too. Can you use, like I had so many cucumbers this summer, I didn't know.
Oh, yes, yes, yes. We can certainly use the fresh vegetables. The only thing we ask is if you bring in fresh produce, you take that to the office.
Uh-huh.
Don't just set it at the door where the food pantry is located. Because depending on when you bring it in, it may sit there for a few hours or maybe even a couple days. If you brought it in on Friday when we're not open,
mm-hmm.
then nobody may see it until, you know, Monday when it reopens. So the only thing we ask when it comes to fresh produce, you bring it to the church office and then they can make sure it gets to a cooler.
So this is a good place. If people have too many cucumbers or too many zucchini or just don't know what to do with them, they can bring them to the food pantry.
Most definitely. Most definitely.
Oh, that's terrific. Okay. Can you remember any particular, you know, just interesting stories about the food pantry?
Well, one thing I could mention is back in 2012, we did a paper plate campaign, we called it. And we asked our guests to write comments about their situation on paper plates. And then that was sent to the governor's office to make him aware of food insecurity issues in the state.
Mm-hmm.
And I can just repeat a couple of things that were written on some of those plates. This was one comment. My husband and I have jobs, but don't make enough money to feed children with food prices so high. Another comment was very simple. Why I use it? Because my family is broke and homeless.
Mm-hmm.
And then another comment from an elderly individual. I have medical problems and am a senior citizen. Hardly have funds to meet my needs. So, you know, that's why we're there, to help those individuals who need some help with food issues.
Right. That's very worrying, actually. Two people, both of them are working and don't have enough to buy food.
Yeah, the working poor.
Yeah, it's very bad. Well, you're obviously supplying a very urgent need here. And congratulations on the wonderful work you do. Thank you so much for coming in to speak to us today.
Yes, thank you, Kay.
I've been talking to Rod Fisher, who works with the food pantry of Bethesda Lutheran Church. I'm Kay Puttock, and this has been a segment for K2I Radio's Community Service Appreciation.
And this is Local Talk on K2I Community Radio. Greta Anderson here with Ursula Rudenberg.
And Kay Puttock was speaking with Rod Fisher about the Bethesda Lutheran Church's food pantry as part of her Community Service Appreciation Program. And now we're going to address another type of hunger, the hunger for the truth.
This coming Friday evening, that's October 3rd, KHOI will be hosting a special screening here at the station of an independent film called Shadows of Liberty.
This film exposes truth about corporate power of news media, censorship, cover-ups, and offers an analysis about how this colludes with the forces of corruption and ultimately war. People featured in the film include Danny Glover, Julian Assange, Dan Rather, Amy Goodman, David Simon, Daniel Ellsberg, Norman Solomon, Dick Gregory, Roberta Baskin, Robert McChesney, John Nichols, Chris Hedges, and many more. It's a full deck. These people are revealing from their vantage point as media experts and news experts on information that we may only half know about at best, if at all. And this film does warrant discussion, so after viewing the film here at the Pantorium, we'll discuss it. Journalist Dennis Chamberlain from ISU Greenlee School of Journalism and Gavin Aronson from Ames Tribune will be leading us in this conversation.
Again, this film will be showed on Friday, October 3rd at 7 p.m. at KHOI 410 Douglas Avenue in Ames. We will be serving some light refreshments at the beginning, and we will ask for a small donation.
Shadows of Liberty premiered last year in Denver, Colorado, at the National Media Conference, and the maker of Shadows of Liberty is Jean-Philippe Tremblay, award-winning filmmaker. And we're fortunate enough to actually have Jean-Philippe on the phone with us, calling from London, I think. Welcome, Jean-Philippe.
Yes, hi. Thank you very much.
Hi, thank you so much for joining us. KHOI is a new community radio station. We're 2 years old now, and we're aiming here in Ames, Iowa, to build a free and unfiltered media organization in support of democracy, high ideals that we're excited about here. So thank you so much for joining us and helping us introduce this film here in Iowa, which really is about these ideas, right?
Absolutely. Well, thank you for having me on. I mean, it's a real pleasure. I am speaking from London, England, so it's great to be, speaking in the States on your radio station.
Can you tell us a little bit about yourself before we talk about the film? You have a film company in London, is that true?
Yes. In 2005, an independent documentary filmmaking company was born. It is called Doc Factory. And the ideals of Doc Factory are very similar to yours and your radio station. Essentially, Doc Factory produces films to bring awareness and inspire change to important social issues around the world. In this case, we produced Shadows of Liberty, and Shadows of Liberty is about information and freedom of information and how important it is for us to live up to these ideals of freedom of information, because without information, we cannot make proper decisions about our lives, our community, our country, and how we operate around the world. So it's really about freedom of information and how important that is.
Jean-Philippe, you're originally from Quebec, right? So you're...
That's correct. I was born in a small town called Jonquière. That's in northern Quebec.
And it took you about 6 years to make this film?
Yeah, about 5 to 6 years to make the film. Really what inspired the film was when me and my team, we came across a book written by Ben Bagdikian entitled The New Media Monopoly. Now, Ben Bagdikian is one of the greatest American journalists. He wrote this book, The New Media Monopoly, in the early 80s. He was looking at the media landscape in the United States and around the world, and how too few organizations owned and controlled the media. In the early 80s, he observed that, first of all, they were all corporate organizations, so none of them were independent media organizations. All of them were corporate, and there was about 50 organizations that owned and controlled the media throughout the United States and the world. And he's rewrit the media monopoly about 5 or 6 times. Every time he needed to update the book, because this number of corporations that owned and controlled the media became smaller and smaller. I read it in the last day, and he was saying that 5 corporations now own and control most of the media that we and read. Those 5 corporations are News Corporation, Time Warner, Disney, Viacom, and General Electric. And part of the issue is that conflict of interest with these being corporations having profit as their bottom line, as their main goal, and they have other business interests like defense contracts in the Middle East, or they're constructing weaponry or our jet engines, as well as bringing us our media, our entertainment, and our news information.
So there's a little bit of a conflict there. I'd like to provide a little mental preview of the movie here for folks to imagine what they will be coming to. In the film, you interview journalists who are trying to report honestly on power, and you follow various themes by telling I think, six stories about events involving journalists where the facts never fully came out. Can you describe some of the themes that are in the movie?
Yes. That's right. I mean, we've been talking about the themes about media and media ownership and media. And I guess our challenge was, well, how do we tell those stories? Mm-hmm. Well, what we did is we went out and we researched around the United States, and we tell the stories of journalists who often are working on behalf of these corporations. They're trying to bring us information, and because the information is about that very corporation, or even about the government that's actually supporting that corporation in more ways than one, they come into conflict with power and they are brushed aside.
Can you give an example of one of those stories?
Well, the first story that we tell in Shadows of Liberty is the one of Roberta Baskin. Roberta Baskin is an American journalist. She's one of the most award-winning journalists in the United States. I think she has over 70 journalistic awards. She was working at the time as a foreign correspondent for CBS News. And she initially did a report about sweatshops run by the Nike Corporation. These sweatshops were based in Vietnam. She had a lot of success with this expose, with this documentary, you can say. And because of that, CBS commissioned her to do a follow-up report on the Nike sweatshops based in Vietnam. Mm-hmm. And when she did her research, she did her update. To make a long story short, they took it off the schedule. They did not broadcast her report, her updated report. And she was brushed aside. She was demoted for asking questions about why her updated series was not broadcast. And eventually, what we also know is that the Nagano Olympics, the Nagano Winter Olympics at the time in 1998, were just on the horizon. And CBS News had a $1 million contract with the Nike Corporation to broadcast the Winter Olympics. And what follows after that is that during the Nagano Winter Olympics, much of the CBS staff, the news staff, broadcasting from the States, from Japan, and on other various shows, were all wearing Nike paraphernalia.
I remember that.
Do you?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Because I was very in touch with the sweatshop movement at that time. Yeah.
So it's one of those things that you see but you don't see. It works on your mind, even if you don't know exactly what you're looking at. It has an effect on you. You know, there's a sophistication to how these things permeate our consciousness. Sometimes we're not even conscious of it. I don't remember the Nike symbol, but I'm sure I saw it.
You're absolutely right, and that's why it's important to speak to journalists, in this case to American journalists, about their situation, about what their experiences are working for these corporations. And when we do that, we get stories such as Roberta Baskin, who represents hundreds, if not thousands, of journalists working in corporate media today. And when we speak about the sophisticated way of, let's say, influencing the public or putting advertisement in our world, it's absolutely amazing how sophisticated it is.
Mm-hmm.
These are corporations that, in many cases, are over 100 years old.
Right.
And they've kind of perfected their art of, in this case, we can say propaganda.
Mm-hmm. So in the film, you tell six stories like this of different, how this manifests in different ways. Is that correct?
Yes, we tell six stories of American journalists like uh-huh. Roberta Baskin, who in this case, it's advertising and a major corporation that comes and influences the news. In other cases, we see where the American government comes and influences the news and actually dictates the news based on their defense interests abroad, and we see that in the case of the war in Iraq. So we tell these stories, and we interweave it with a history of some of the most important moments in American media history. So we learn, by watching the film, we learn why is it that we've come to have just a handful of corporations that own and control news and information. Because if we look at the ideals of democracy and we could say the American experiment, it's in the Constitution, there is freedom of information. And journalists and journalism is the only profession that's protected by the U.S. Constitution. So why is it that there's this, in every way, a lack of freedom as opposed to a freedom of information? It's actually the exact opposite that we see happening.
Jean-Pierre, what – oh, I'm sorry. Go ahead, Greta.
With your the title of your film reminds me in this context of Plato's Myth of the Cave, where people are in a cave and they see images, but they're not the real thing. They're just sort of one step removed. And that's kind of how I am imagining this freedom that we supposedly have.
Yeah, I think that's a good way of interpreting the title of the film, Shadows of Liberty, and I appreciate that very much.
Jean-Pierre, what?
I was just going to explain a little bit where the title comes from. It comes from one of the forefathers of democracy and America. His name is Tom Paine. He was born in England, and in his 30s, he went to the United States just before the American Revolution. He was a journalist, you can say, as well as a revolutionary. And he said, I'm paraphrasing, he said that when men stop the privilege of thinking, the last shadow of liberty quits the horizon. So that's where we took our title. It was really from one of the American forefathers who said that.
When you were doing research for this film, I read that you actually you followed the Federal Communications Commission when it did its kind of historic tour around the United States asking for feedback from American people. Were you at some of those hearings, and did you hear what people had to say in the country about this?
Yes. You know, I was interested in doing a film about the media in the United States. And obviously, when you do that, you look at the Federal Communications Commission, the FCC, and look at what they're up to. And it just so happened that at the time, the commissioner was Kevin Martin,
mm-hmm.
and Kevin Martin announced that the FCC was going to review and change media ownership rules in the United States. And in order to do so, he announced that he was going to do at least six hearings, media ownership hearings around the United States. So that, for me, that was an amazing opportunity to travel around the country and see what the people had to say about their media. And I followed every single FCC hearing in the U.S. At the time. That was in 2007 and 2008. And it was amazing to see the people actually come to the hearings and generally, the people were just fed up with their media being owned by a massive corporation that wasn't even part of their community. In many cases, they were talking about radio stations that were manned out of New York City or Los Angeles in small communities in the Midwest, for example.
Mm-hmm.
So people were really fed up about their media, the way it looked, the way it sounded, the kind of information they were getting, the kind of false information that they were getting. And this affected a lot of these people. So it was amazing to come out and see
that people really cared about
what
it.
What the people had to say.
Yeah,
absolutely.
Mm. Jean-Pierre, could you, or Jean-Philippe? I'm apologies. Could you, just to close out, could you give us a little impression of what making this film ended up meaning to you? What made the biggest impression on you at the end?
Well, it was just amazing. I mean, when when I approached this film, it seemed very big for me to look at what we can arguably call the biggest corporations in the world, and we could see them ally with the biggest government in the world, the U.S. government. And for me to approach the film or the subject and realize that I was going to make a film about it, that seemed I was very humbled just by that thought. But when I began investigating and traveling around the United States, it's just an amazing experience to, I mean, we were mentioning the people coming to the FCC hearings. These are moms and dads and brothers and sisters, people who have regular jobs in their communities, people involved in the media, working in the media, journalists and producers and editors, and for them to come forward and to speak the way that they do in our film. And these are people who, like I said earlier, who are award-winning journalists. They are people who have local radio stations such as yours, who have new media outlets such as Democracy Now! That started very small and are getting bigger and bigger and more integral and more important for all of us to follow. For these people to come forward and inspire the film and be part of the film, that was really the greatest inspiration for me. And it's amazing to see the kind of work that is being done by so many people and organizations in the United States. So we really have to find inspiration within those organizations, within your very radio station that I'm speaking on right now. And these are present around the country.
Well, thank you so much.
We really have to pay attention to what's happening in our world and to take a good look and to make the right choices. And in this case, to make a decision, where am I getting information from? Who am I gonna listen to before I choose the university I go to, or before I go and make my vote for the next president of the United States? These are such crucial issues in our lives, and we have to make those decisions, and we have to look around and really choose an independent media that's not filtered through one of these corporations.
And we need information to do it. The folks in the film are very courageous, and this is really a courageous film. We've been speaking with Jean-Philippe Tremblay, who's the maker of Shadows of Liberty, a documentary that investigates lies and distortions in news media. And thank you so much for speaking with us. It's really wonderful to hear that, even from the distance of across the Atlantic Ocean, there's this level of understanding and support and just, clarity on what the mission is of free speech media. Thank you for joining us so much. We really appreciate it.
Well, it's an honor for me to be here. It's an honor for the film to be shown along with KHOI, and we've done a lot of work to produce this film and to get it distributed around the world. So this is just a real treat to have it shown in Iowa, and I really look forward to the screening on this Friday evening.
That's great. Well, if you're in the neighborhood, stop on by. We'll be holding the film, a screening of the film, at 7 o'clock on Friday at KHOI, and we'll be asking for a $5 donation, and we will be serving light refreshments, so please stay for a discussion afterwards, led by journalist Dennis Chamberlain from ISU Greenleaf School of Journalism and Gavin Aronson from the Ames Tribune. Thank you, Dennis and Gavin, and thank you so much, Jean-Philippe, for sharing this great film with us and talking about it with us. Have a great day over there in London.
Thank you very much, and same to you.
Bye-bye.
Welcome back to Local Talk on KHOI Community Radio. And just in case you are having a manic Monday, our next two guests will encourage you to slow down, enjoy life, connect with your community, and walk wherever it is you are going. They are Cheryl Langston and John Sheerholtz, co-chairs of the Advisory Committee for Healthiest Ames, an initiative that is just rolling out now. Welcome to you, Cheryl and John.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Now, I know you have an event to tell us about, but first, what is this new initiative, Healthiest Ames, and where did it come from?
Healthiest Ames is the outgrowth of a Blue Zones effort that we did several years ago. We were unsuccessful in being selected as a Blue Zones demonstration city, and rather than reapply for that designation, we decided to keep our board together and function trying to create healthy issues and initiatives in Ames with that group of people.
What is a Blue Zone?
Blue Zones is a book by Dan Buettner who identified five areas around the world where people live to be 100 at 10 to 20 times the usual rate. And there has been a Blue Zones initiative, and there have been has been support from Wellmark in Iowa for Blue Zones communities. And we feel very good about those activities. But, excuse me, part of their program is smoking cessation. And Ames wrote the book on smoking cessation when we did away with smoking issues in Ames years ago.
So maybe that was why you didn't get the grant or we didn't get the Blue Zone designation, is that we had already accomplished some of the goals that they had set out. Is that what you're suggesting?
That was our speculation. I'm not sure that's correct.
Well, the Blue Zones, some of the principles that this author, Dan Buettner, he was a National Geographic author, so he was kind of looking anthropologically almost into these cultures that had long lives, and looking at, you know, why they, or some of the things that they had in common.
He did, and he studied these areas and reasons why people lived as long as they did, and most of them lived very good lives, very healthy lives. And we actually have a board member by the name of Peter Martin, who's a gerontologist at Iowa State, who has done research with the same people that identified Blue Zones years ago. And this last spring semester, Peter was in Japan and was in the homes of 22 centenarians and was pursuing these same studies that he has done before.
Do these tend to be rural people or were city dwellers who live so long?
My sense is that the majority live in more rural areas, but they clearly have people who live in cities as well and who have lived. And he will be doing some programs this next year regarding these things that we will be advertising.
Oh, that'll be interesting. So what principles are its healthiest aims drawing upon? I know Blue Zones has a quite detailed list of principles that these societies all sort of have gelled around sort of organically. What have you drawn out for that, for healthiest aims?
Well, first of all, our vision is that Ames will be the healthiest community in Iowa. And our mission is that we will continuously improve our community's quality of life through education and collaboration that promotes active engagement and healthy living. We, in the process of defining ourselves a little bit, we have chosen four areas of focus. Those are healthy food choices, chronic disease management, community connectedness, and physical activity. And so we've built goals and some strategies around each of those four areas. Some of them are more developed than others. And we see that there is a connectedness also between the four. They're not unique and isolated. So that's where we're starting from. That's our starting point, those four areas. And so we're working to get those fully developed.
I like the connectedness part of it.
Community connectedness. Yeah, there's been a lot of research lately that you hear about how important community is to really longevity and well-being.
Yeah, that's very true, and I think that has been shown to make a huge difference in terms of taking people out of isolation and having them be connected with their communities.
And it seems like that's one of the lessons that we can learn from less developed societies, such as the ones that this author from National Geographic has looked at, that communities in more undeveloped situations or less technologically advanced, I should say, situations might have more tight-knit sense of community and belonging
right.
than we do in this fragmented modern world.
Well, it makes sense that the more connected people are, the more communication that's going to be happening, the more they'll be able to be made aware of what is available in the community, what the resources are. They'll probably be more active physically. The more connected they are, it just flows very nicely.
And the other way around, if you are walking places instead of driving, you are much more likely to run into somebody and have a short conversation
right.
that will give you the information that you might need.
Exactly.
So so what kind of you mentioned lectures by Peter Martin, the gerontologist at ISU. What other sorts of events are you kind of dreaming or imagining for Healthiest Ames?
We have a national walkability expert by the name of Mark Fenton who's going to be in Ames on the 3rd of October. He is going to be giving talks associated with the Iowa Association for Health, Physical Education, Recreation, and Dance. He's going to be their keynote speaker for their conference, and then we have supported him with a presentation in the afternoon on the 3rd of October from 3:30 till 5 p.m. at the City Hall Council Chambers. And he is getting some maps and information about Ames ahead of time. So hopefully that presentation will be able to speak to specific issues about trails and bikeability and walkability in Ames. And we're really excited about this.
That sounds great.
Yes,
yeah.
I think it's going to be a really good thing for the community.
So that's this Friday at 7 p.m.?
The 3rd, right. Correct.
At, no.
No, at it's going to be at 5.
At 3:30.
Sorry.
All right.
Oh, we'll do this.
Let's do this again.
October 3rd, 3:30 to 5 right. in the Ames City Council Chambers.
Right. Oh. Okay. And then afterwards, you can walk over to KHOI and watch the movie.
Right.
Yes. That sounds really interesting.
Very interesting, yes.
Okay. And there are also some physical activities that are, group physical activities that are scheduled for Healthiest Ames.
The scheduled events are the Healthiest State Initiative, and we have labeled our group Healthiest Ames to be in concert with the state Healthiest Ames activity or Healthiest Activities. But there are at least 20 walks around Ames at various places, and you can go to the Healthiest State Walk and identify those areas and sign up to do that, and we would encourage everybody to do that.
This is a really wonderful initiative. It's very exciting that you're doing this.
Well, we've been excited about it, and the slow rollout of the process has been a little frustrating occasionally, but I think we consider ourselves to be, want Healthiest Ames to be a conduit to get the right people together. And regarding this walkability and bikeability situation, we've had discussions with the Director of Parks and Recreation, Keith Abramson, and the city, and have had very good cooperation in terms of things that we're working on.
Yeah, these are ways to get healthy where you also can really enjoy the town and the fresh air and, mm-hmm. and other people as well, which makes a huge difference.
That's exactly what it's all about.
Mm-hmm.
The Ames Bike Coalition has been very involved also in this initiative, and I would just underscore what John says about us being a conduit. There are many, many great opportunities for participation in Ames and lots of options for people, and it's not our intent to recreate anything. It's mm-hmm. already there.
Right.
We just want to make sure that there's a strong connection between the groups and strong communication, and if there is something that we can enable, mm-hmm. we think that's probably the value of our role.
Well, I noticed on your board Gregory Welk. I've spoken with him about his walking desk. It's very interesting. He and his students at ISU have developed a system where you can walk on a treadmill and get your work done at the same time on a computer. So maybe you guys can help some of those kind of pop up around Ames. I'd love to work at one of those.
Well, studies are showing that sedentary existences are not nearly as healthy as being up moving around. And when you have desk activities, it's tough not to be sedentary. So
yeah.
That concept is one that I think is really has merit.
Yeah. Kind of brings to mind the walking and chewing gum at the same time. I was just imagining. It's probably good for you to learn how to do that because it makes you more flexible in your thinking.
I have trouble imagining reading while I'm walking, but I haven't tried it yet.
Is there a website where these various dates and times can be?
Yes, actually. Our website is rather robust at this point. It's healthiestames.org, and please go to that. And we're trying to identify physical activities and things that are happening in the community. And there's information about us and our board members, and if there's any questions or contact information for that.
Okay, great. Give the website again.
Healthiestames.org.
Okay, well, thank you very much, John Sheerholtz, retired radiologist from McFarland, and thank you, Cheryl Langston, retired from ISU.
Thank you so much for coming. It's very, very exciting to hear about
our pleasure, and thank you for the opportunity.
Thank you. We hope to come back again with some more great events.
Please do, and let us know how the project's going and just what kind of results. That's
excellent.
Great.
Yep.
Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Let's go make some noise. Time goes so fast. It's just another manic Monday. Wish it was Sunday. That's my fun day. I don't have to run day. It's just another manic Monday.
Ursula, as the song reminded us, in case we didn't know, it's the beginning of a week, soon the beginning of a new month, and certainly the beginning of a new season. Spring is known as a time for cleaning, but there is a lot of cleanup associated with fall as
yep.
well. Cleaning up the garden. I've been rearranging the furniture in
mm-hmm.
my home in anticipation of spending more time indoors with less outdoor light.
Our next segment tells us what we need to think about fall cleaning for our winged friends, the bluebirds. This segment is brought to us by Patch Larbaugh, our nature reporter who keeps an eye on wildlife and tells us what's happening through his phenology segments.
This is Pat Schleibob with KHOI Community Radio with today's Focus on Phenology, the Eastern Bluebirds. This time of late summer, many migrant songbirds are filtering through Iowa's grasslands and woodlands. Bluebirds are cavity-nesting songbirds that look for holes in woodland trees at the edge of grasslands. Historically, they found convenient nesting in woodpecker holes that included wooden fence posts. Today, many bluebird enthusiasts are placing bluebird nest boxes on metal posts near grassland habitat. The boxes are 4 inches by 4 inches and 8 inches tall. Bluebirds are in the thrush family that includes American robins. So like the robins, areas that have short grass at the edge of towns, cemeteries, or athletic fields are all prime locations for bluebird nest boxes. It is wonderful to welcome bluebirds with their cheery call, plus they carry the blue of the sky upon their backs. Beginning in April, the female lays up to 5 blue eggs. With good stewardship practices of discouraging house sparrows, bluebirds can nest as many as 3 times between April and September. So with 3 nesting of 5 each time, you can see how quickly a population can be enjoyed in your community. It is best to predator-proof nest boxes to deter hungry critters like raccoons or snakes. Also, cats, both domestic and feral, can be hard on nesting songbirds, especially bluebirds. Bluebirds are territorial with intruders, including other bluebirds. Neighboring bluebirds must be at least 100 yards from an active pair and an active nest. I once had a scolding male clicking its bill and swooping upon me for checking his brood. He escorted me from his territory demonstratively. He only retreated when a second male became defensive and picked up where the previous bluebird of his land left off. But it's nice to have 2 pairs in the same area. So if you'd like to learn more about bluebirds, give me a call at 515-460-1815. This time of year, nest boxes can provide needed housing to migrating bluebirds. Old nests should be removed from this year's nesting efforts. Also, it is good to exclude deer mice that want to overwinter in your boxes. Wrapping the post with smooth metal flashing will exclude mice, snakes, and raccoons. For the most part, bluebirds fly to warmer areas in Missouri and Arkansas to overwinter. However, Christmas bird counts that tally all the birds around Ames during winter will some years include eastern bluebirds. So this time of year, it is good to clean bluebird boxes and make any repairs that are needed. And remember, a dry nest box is a better nest box for cavity nesting songbirds like eastern bluebirds. They'll welcome your efforts next March when males return to initiate nesting once again. And that's our phenology for today.
You've been listening to Local Talk on KHOI Community Radio, 89.1 FM, Story City, Ames, where we explore the people, stories, and events in Central Iowa. Thank you, Pat Schleibob, for your report. It's time now to close the show. Earlier, I spoke with Cheryl Langston and John Sheerholtz of Healthiest Ames Initiative.
We also spoke with Jean-Philippe Tremblay, award-winning filmmaker of the film Shadows of Liberty, a documentary investigating the lies and distortions of corporate news conglomerates. We will hold a screening of this film this coming Friday at KHOI, October 3rd, at 7 p.m. We're asking for a $5 donation, and we will serve light refreshments. And please stay afterwards for a discussion led by journalists Dennis Chamberlain from the ISU Greenlee School of Journalism and Gavin Aronson from the Ames Tribune.
Kay Puddock earlier interviewed Rod Fisher at Bethesda Lutheran Church about their food pantry. Our theme song is Backtracking by Al Harris and Tom Richards from their CD, The Ballad of Kate Shelley. Other music we heard was Manic Monday by the Bangles.
You can also listen to this show and all of our past Local Talk shows online at our website, khoifm.org. That's khoifm.org, and you can see listings of our past guests and resource information. Also, please remember you can listen to KHOI now online at khoifm.org, and all our shows are being archived in real time as well on the website,
khoyfm.org. You can find the link to the stream and the archives on our homepage on the top left side of the page.
Local Talk is a radio production training workshop as well as a radio show. If you would like to join the team as a reporter, contact us at 292-2878. That's 292-2878. Or contact us through our website, khoyfm.org.
Your participation, as always, as audience, is what makes KHOI possible. Thank you for listening to Free Speech Radio, KHOI, and see you again on the radio.